Welcome, everyone, to episode 273 of the NBA podcast. I'm Brian Toporek, and we are now a week into the 2019-2020 season. So we are going to survey the landscape, take stock of the top surprises and disappointments from the first week, and see how much stock we should put into them. A reminder before we get started that you can follow us on Twitter at the NBA pod. In our bio, you can find our Twitter handles, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes and wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some 5-star reviews. And we're now being hosted on Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. Joining me today, as always, is my very stable genius of a co-host, Morten Jensen. How's it going, Mort?
It's going well, Brian. We're a week into the season now, which, plug, I wrote something about the rookies and their week one in the NBA over at Forbes. It's interesting because now we're entering that period where teams are really trying to figure themselves out. Like, they've come in, they've either been slightly disappointing, or they've achieved a little bit more than they maybe internally believed they would. Right. So now it becomes like a law of averages type of thing.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, again, we're not going to overreact, much like we did our episode with Chris Herring on Friday. It's still such a small sample size that we're not going to overreact to any team either getting off to a hot start or a slow start, or any players getting off to a hot start and a slow start.
But like, what's the fun in that?
Well, we're going to do a hot take episode at some point soon, but like, let's get a slightly bigger sample size before we start decrying the downfall of the Warriors and the Sacramento Kings and all that stuff.
Oh, so you're telling me Aaron Gordon is not going to continue averaging 7 points a game on 29% shooting?
Well, that he might until they trade him. but we will, you know, we do have regular season basketball to analyze now. So as much as we're not going to overreact, we are just going to react. That's, you know, that's what we have to do given the sample size available to us. So, Mort, let's start on the good side first with the pleasant surprises before we go into the not-so-pleasant surprises, also known as disappointments. So who's caught your eye in a good way this first week?
Well, I mean, the Minnesota Timberwolves, I got to give credit. They're 3-0. I did not think that a team with Andrew Wiggins taking that many shots would be 3-0. But to his credit, you know, he single-handedly won them a game against Miami by knocking down, what was it, 3 or 4 triples late. Mm-hmm. And just, you know, being a steady hand, which is not something you usually associate him with, but like, he was a crunch time player. But at the same time, like, obviously the main cause of this result is Karl Anthony Towns has basically just been allowed to do whatever the hell he wants to do. And that seems very exciting. Like, he's doing all types of stuff that we've never seen before. Like you know, dribbling 17 times and then stepping back for a three. Like, he's a 7-foot. Does he know that he's a 7-footer? Has anyone told him?
Right. Yeah. He's, like, doing his best James Harden impersonation, which is amazing because he could actually do it.
He can. Yeah, unlike Harden this year. Yeah.
Right. He's actually just replaced Harden as being able to do that. But yeah, I mean, he's averaging 32 points, 13.3 rebounds, 5 assists, 3 steals, 2 blocks. Like, if he keeps up those numbers, he's going to be in the MVP race.
I don't think
he's going to maintain that type of production, but I don't think it's far off from what he's going to keep doing.
Right. No, I agree with that. And you know, the team that surprised me just a little bit more, the Dallas Mavericks, because they were one coaching challenge away from being undefeated. I watched that game against Portland where the coaching challenge came down late with the, you know, phantom foul on, or it actually was a foul on. I think it was. Oh God, I watched the game. That was Dame, right?
I didn't even see that game, so I
Okay. Yeah, but ultimately it ended up being, you know, a toss up at half court and like a jump ball, and everything just kind of went Portland's way, and Dallas fans afterwards were very, what the hell just happened?
Right.
But Dallas in general have just played so well together. Like, their percentages haven't been great, But it really doesn't matter. Like, there is a cohesiveness, and you know, we talked about Dallas. You weren't all that high on them, and I totally understood why, because after Luka and Porzingis, there's really a significant drop-off. But it almost seems like just having those two guys has made, like, the hierarchy just that much more streamlined. Like, you know who the top two options are, and everyone else falls in line. It seems very streamlined to me.
Yeah, and I mean, look at, you know, we're recording this on Wednesday, so we're, you know, look at the game last night against the Nuggets, where they didn't have a single guy score more than 14 points, but they still beat the freaking Nuggets in Denver because they had nine guys in double digits. Like, you're right, I was lukewarm. You know, the Mavericks were getting some, like, oh yeah, maybe they can make the playoffs buzz ahead of the season, and I wasn't there with them because, we discussed about it in the season previews. I just was skeptical of their depth beyond KP and Luka. I mean, I like some of their guys individually, Dwight Powell, Seth Curry, Maxi Kleba. I like these guys, D'Lon Wright, but I just didn't necessarily think they were going to have that consistent third option. Maybe they don't need to. Maybe they're just going to have a bunch of, like, you don't know where it's coming from, but they're going to have enough scoring off the bench and from their supporting cast to keep Porzingis and Doncic afloat. Also, I mean, the combination of Doncic and Porzingis, like, on paper, you knew it was going to work well, just in terms of their skill sets. They were a very good fit together, much like LeBron and Anthony Davis, as we've seen in LA. I think it's worked possibly even better than we could have expected, especially with KP coming off the ACL tear, you know, shaking off 20 months of rust. He looks really good already.
He's picked up exactly where he left off.
Yeah.
Even statistically, like when he got injured, he was averaging 22.7 points a night for the Knicks. Mm-hmm. Right now in Dallas, he's averaging 22.3.
There you go.
And he's becoming way more of a playmaker.
Yeah.
I think just having that time off and maybe just watching games and watching film and just growing both as a person and as a player, I think maybe he realized, I can do more than just being like a scorer and shot blocker. I can be a playmaker. I can initiate the offense. I can do this and this and that. And also, he's leaned into his three-point shot a lot more so far. Again, granted, small sample size alert, but he's taking 7.5 threes a game right now. And when he was in New York, I remember you and I, we used to talk about maybe you should just take more threes as well. Right. And now he is, and he's even taking more free throws as well. He's becoming like one of those analytics darlings. I like it.
I do too. And I mean, we said coming into the season, you know, these guys are both the best teammates they've ever played with together in the NBA. So Luka is helping Kristaps. Kristaps is helping Luka, vice versa. We've seen it with Luka too. Like he hasn't missed a beat. I mean, as you said, small sample size, but you know, 25 points, almost 9 rebounds, almost 7 assists a game. He's taking nearly 9 threes a game.
Yeah.
Like, he's not shooting well. He's only hit, he's 10 of 35 overall, so 28.6%. But if he's empowered to continue doing that, you know, I said coming into the season for the Mavericks, sure, it's great if they make the playoffs. I don't think it's going to happen, and, it's early, who knows. But we just need to make sure they're making strides with the Luka KP core. If they're empowering Luka to take 9 threes a game, that's great. I don't care how well he shoots this season. I will in future years, but not this season. Just let the guy develop his shot making on the fly, because I think just that experience against live ball opponents is the only way he's going to get significantly better. You can practice all you want in an open gym. We've seen, you know, how many centers have we seen unguarded in a gym knock down three after three after three, and then when it comes to game time, nothing happens. Luka, get him the reps now, so when you're ready to actually contend, because you have, you know, Kristaps on a 5-year deal now, you have Luka, who's only entering the second year of his rookie scale deal, you're going to have him for the next 8 years. Like, your window is wide open. You're not anywhere close to your window if you're the Mavericks yet. These guys are still super young. So let these guys figure it out. Just develop them together, and then let's see what happens in a couple years, because they have two foundational pieces now.
Also, in regards to Luka's shooting, I mentioned this on Twitter earlier, I think either today or yesterday. Basically, I think there is going to come a time where the threes that he takes are just going to be so, you know, so much better, because like the degree of difficulty he takes his threes with now are so high. Like the step backs, the coming off, like the dribble handoff situation where he actually like he gets the pass from someone, like the handoff, and then he has to take like two power dribbles essentially because the defense are just so guardly tightly guarding him, and it ends up being like again a pull up more or less. Like he doesn't get a whole lot of those standstill shots, mm-hmm. and when he does, it's like 5 feet away from the actual three-point line, and he's like, oh, okay, this is the only open shot I'm going to get over the next quarter. I'm going to launch it. So to me, it seems like if he can find normal shots, he's going to be one of those like truly knockdown shooters, like 40-plus percent. Mm-hmm. And if you notice like his misses aren't bad. Like no. He, very rarely do we see him like pull up like for an air ball or something. Like it's online most of the time, and it's like he can be fading away, he can be in a very difficult spot like position wise and is still right on the actual rim. Like that mm-hmm. takes skill.
Yeah, for sure. I'm very envious of Mavericks fans because you can see the foundation of something special growing. Yeah. And I don't know, we'll see what happens for the rest of the season. I don't know if they're going to be able to sustain this kind of start, but I clearly underrated them going into the season based on what we've seen so far. And I, you know, knock on wood, Luka and Kristaps will still stay healthy all season, and we'll get to see them work their magic for 78 more games and then some.
That would be good. I would love to see them in the playoffs. Luka in a playoff setting, oh, yeah.
Yeah, if we thought Jamal Murray was fun last year in the playoffs, can you imagine mm-hmm. Luka?
I mean, look, here's the thing. Luka has won championships. Like, we rarely discuss this.
Right.
Like, so if he gets into the playoffs, like, people, you know the media narrative would be,
oh, yeah.
Well, he hasn't played in the playoffs yet, so he'll have to adjust. Like, no. That's,
right.
That's
right.
Not the way it works with Luka. No.
Yeah. Let's switch now, Bort. Because we're talking about Luka, we should just mention the other Rookie of the Year contender from last year, the runner-up, Trae Young, who, first of all, prayers up. He suffered the ankle injury Tuesday night. It sounds like it's not too bad. I think I saw a report that he might miss, like, 2 weeks, which, you know, all things considered, is a somewhat lucky break. At least it's not, like, a major season-ending injury, anything like that. Caris LeVert last year, none of that. So that's great.
Yeah.
Holy hell, man. Trae mm-hmm. Young. Like, we're talking about Luka got better from year one to year two. Trae Young also took a big leap from year one to year two. His per-game stats right now are somewhat skewed because he left so early against Miami. But here's what he did in the first three games against Detroit, Orlando, and Philly. Keep in mind, Orlando and Philly are two of the best defensive teams in the league so far. 34 points on 51.5% shooting. 9 assists, 6 rebounds, 4.3 threes. Mm-hmm. He was making strides even last year. You know, he started inefficiently by the end of the year, especially after the All-Star break. Kid caught on fire. He's clearly built upon that this year, and he just looks even more in control of the entire Hawks offense that, you know, compared to last year, especially early in the year. Like, they hung 40 on the Sixers in the first quarter on Monday, and then the Sixers just basically had to change their defensive scheme on the fly and were like, we need to smother Trae Young at all costs. Like, we'll let other guys beat us, but we need to start hounding him from the second he crosses the half-court line because he is just so freaking sneaky, or like slithering around screens, and then he's just – his passing vision is phenomenal. Like, every time you think you have him beat, he slips a pass into John Collins. And John Collins either dunks or pulls up for a mid-range two. And, you know, more often than not, we'll hit it. So, we're talking about, you know, the Mavericks have something promising to build on. Look, the Hawks are 2-2. They're probably going to fall down the standings a little bit because we saw after Luka left Tuesday night, the Miami Heat just basically had their way with them. So,
yes,
I do not have high hopes for the Hawks sans Trae Young for the next couple weeks.
Play Jabari at point guard.
Oh, God. Cam Reddish at point guard.
I would wager that Jabari Parker would actually make a better point guard at this point. Cam Reddish has been...
I agree.
atrocious offensively. Yeah. I will say Reddish has had nice moments defensively. He also had that huge dunk the other night. But in terms of like half-court offense and just getting stuff done scoring-wise, like he's shooting 21.9% from the field.
He came up with a steal in the Sixers game late. Like Ben Simmons was inbounding, tried to throw it across the entire court. Cam Reddish stole it, drove down, and immediately turned it over. It was just like...
Oh, that's fantastic.
It was the full Cam Reddish experience in about 20 seconds.
He's 0 for 14 from 3 this year.
That will get better, I would have to hope. But in general, I mean, if we're talking about Luka and KP giving the Mavericks a ridiculous foundation, Trae Young, John Collins give the Hawks a really, really promising foundation to build upon. And I am super high on this team long term. Unfortunately, I think they're probably 1 year away from legitimate playoff contention, but they're going to be frisky this year. Like, they gave the Sixers all they could handle. They're a good team.
Yeah, I'm not with you, though. I think they could contend for a playoff spot this year.
It's possible, if only because all the other teams that we thought would be in contention for the eighth seed are farting it away.
Yeah, exactly. Like, the Orlando Magic right now, they're shooting 38.7% from the field as a team. 26% from downtown as a team. So... yeah, like, you can probably, if they don't get considerably better, like, right now, that's probably a team that was in the playoffs last year that is looking at just not repeating that success.
They do have the league's worst offensive rating right now, but they are second in defensive rating, so I think that's going to buoy them through any offensive struggles. But you're right, definitely some kinks to work out for Orlando. We will save... at least one of the other teams for the disappointments section. A couple of others, actually, that we thought would be in the mix for that eighth seed. So, yeah, I mean, right now the Hawks are the sixth seed, but I think the Trey injury is going to bump them down a few pegs. But, like, realistically, 35 to 38 wins is within this team's reach this season, which is phenomenal considering, they've really only started this rebuild last year.
Yeah, that's fair to say.
Like, they're making some very quick progress, and I am envious of Hawks fans because you guys are like the mid 2010s process Sixers were, and I'm jealous. I miss those days.
But it goes to show that when you get a generational talent, though, like it just, instead of having teams that get, good players, but not, franchise caliber players, it just takes so much longer for teams. And of course, like, alluding to Chicago here.
I thought you were going to say the Magic.
Well, the Magic as well. I mean, who is their generational talent? I mean, they hope that it's going to be Jonathan Isaac, but I guess the possibility is still there. But that's kind of the issue here. When you have these all NBA caliber players, they usually show within their first year already that, hey, we are going to be on this level down the road. Like, Trae Young showed it already last year. Same with Luka in Dallas. And then there's like a bunch of teams where they have good players, but none of them have really taken that step up. And I think when you get that type of all-star / all-NBA guy, it just expedites your entire rebuilding process.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, the Magic are definitely hoping Isaac is that person, maybe Markel if he taps into his previous upside, but...
Right, but so many question marks. Like, this is Isaac's third year, I want to say.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess you... But he'll need to sort of come out of nowhere, if you catch my drift. I mean...
Offensively, for sure.
Well, offensively, and also just, being able to show that, hey, I can lead a team. Like, some of these guys who really become superstars, like, almost from day one, they're like, hey, I'm I'm going to take over. I can do this.
Like, yeah.
There is a certain level of swagger, I guess. I have a hard time seeing a lot of these teams just breaking through without it. And you're looking at like Dallas and Atlanta there, who are just owning stuff right now.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, you could point to like Pascal Siakam and Giannis, of course, being the rare examples of guys who it did take a couple years for them to show that superstar upside. But like this is probably the year where it either needs to happen for Isaac or it's not going to.
Right. Oh, are we, I didn't know, are we really already putting Siakam in the superstar category? Like, don't get me wrong, I am halfway in on that bandwagon if you're willing to take it that far.
Yeah. I won't go full superstar yet, but we're getting closer. At least, I mean, clearly an all-star caliber player. He was last year. This isn't even a hot take, but.
Like, no, for sure. Like, yeah. No, but I mean, I could buy stock into that. Like, he's been so much better this year, so yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Could he win most improved player for two straight years? Is that allowed?
I mean, I don't think there's a rule saying it wouldn't be allowed. that would be amazing, though.
That's true. Also on my surprises list are the Phoenix Suns, who are far more competitive, especially given the DeAndre Ayton suspension than I expected. You know, they blow out the Kings opening night. They had a couple of, I believe, one-point losses against, it was Dallas and Utah, if I'm not mistaken. And then they're the only team to beat the Clippers so far.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, sorry, it was Denver and Utah, my bad. But yeah, then they beat the Clippers 130-122. Ricky Rubio is giving them, you know, I'm so glad we had Gerald on for our Pacific preview to like talk us into the Suns not being a tire fire, because a lot of people peg them as the worst team in the West. And, you know, Gerald makes you see the light of like, they're not going to be the worst team. They might not make the playoffs, but having Ricky Rubio changes this team for the better. Just having competent players, Kelly Oubre Jr. taking a big jump forward. You know, they have like a competent rotation now, which is something you could not say about the Phoenix Suns for the last few years. So do I think they're going to make the playoffs this year? No, absolutely not. The West is too deep. Do I think they're better than a lot of people thought coming into the year? Do I think they could flirt with a mid-30 ceiling? Yeah, possibly.
Do I think this team is still an absolute S show internally and could totally implode at any given point in time? Yes.
That is fair. I would never question the Suns' ability to implode. But they they have a 6-game stretch coming up where I think we're going to learn a lot about them. They have Golden State tonight. They have Memphis on Saturday on the road. Then they have a 6-game homestand against the Sixers, Miami, Brooklyn, the Lakers, Atlanta, and Boston. Now, we don't know if Trae Young is going to play in that Atlanta game, so that might be winnable. But otherwise, you know, all of those other games appear pretty tough on paper. So the Sixers, I know, are in part of a 4-game road stand, so maybe they'll catch them sleeping because the other three teams they're playing, I think it's like Portland, Utah, Denver, so they're all, you know, games that you get up for more than you do against the Suns. But and Ayton won't be playing, so Embiid can't get mad and Hulk out on him. But all of those other games are pretty tough, so I think we'll learn a lot about how seriously to take the Suns within the next few weeks.
Yeah, I'm not there yet.
No, I'm not either. I'm not to the point where I'm like buying them entirely, but
I'm not even on the wagon of them having like, you know, a good start to the season necessarily. I think the Clippers game was I saw that one and they really, I mean, they did something very, very good and they realized, hey, the Clippers don't really have, you know, an inside presence defensively. So they just attacked the damn rim all night long and it worked. I'm actually surprised that that hasn't been talked about more in the media because it seemed like that was a uh-oh moment for the Clippers.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I mean, I look at a team that right now is enjoying, you know, the start of a new season. Ricky Rubio, right now, the heart and soul of the team, which says a lot about Devin Booker, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
But I don't I'm not there where I'm going, oh, there's a surprise necessarily. I think this is at most going to last a couple of games. I look at them just as the weird team that they used to be. I think unless you fix something internally, and especially for an organization that has no structure and has no synergy or whatever, I just cannot fathom that they would be good.
I mean, that's fair. I still question their long-term outlook and everything like that. But if you told me coming into the season, their first four games are against Sacramento, Denver, the Clippers, and Utah, that the Phoenix Suns would come out of that 2-2,
Yeah, with Aiden being injured even, or not injured, suspended even. Yeah.
Right, with Aiden missing three of those games, and Rubio missed one of the game too.
Right. Then I would tell you that Frank Kaminsky is not going to keep on averaging 8 rebounds a game.
That is probably true. I'll give you
and
that.
And I would generally point out that there are a lot of statistical anomalies with a lot of these players.
Yeah. Yeah, I know Seth Partnow of The Athletic had the thing yesterday where he's talking about quote-unquote Jedi defense, where it's just like teams that missed a ton of shots, open shots from three, and I know the Suns were on that list as being beneficiaries of some unusually cold shooting. So
yeah,
if that regresses to the mean, so will the Suns. But I mean, they're intrigued. I'm,
their opponents are shooting 40.7% against them.
There you go. Yeah. So I'm intrigued to see, you know, how these next few weeks shake out for them. Any other surprises on your list, Mort?
Well, I mean, I guess I don't know if I should pick them. You can sense the uncertainty in my voice here. The Brooklyn Nets are 1-2. It's only 3 games. Like, a lot of teams have played 4, so it's really small sample size. I was just kind of surprised to see them drop that game in Memphis, but, I mean, good on Ja Morant, who was just a beast, and Jay Crowder hitting that 3. So they were one Jay Crowder 3 away from winning.
Right.
I mean, that could have swung either way, but I don't know. I was just kind of expecting for a team like Brooklyn with Kyrie, you know, supposedly in his prime and ready to take on the world and all of that, that should have been, on paper at least, an easy win, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, and with Kyrie averaging 37.7 points per game to start the season.
Right.
Yeah, you would think they would be off.
Just a little bit.
Yeah. No, yeah. I'll give you that for sure. That was definitely, they would fall in my disappointments category. But before we shift over to them, we got to talk about one more pleasant surprise, and I think you know where I'm going. Russell Westbrook!
Oh, of course you are. Okay.
Russell Westbrook, who is
You have such high standards for good play, yes?
50% from the field.
Mm-hmm.
76% from the line after doing 65.
That's the one I'm the most impressed with.
Yeah. But I mean, 24.3 points, 12.7 rebounds, 9.7 assists, not taking nearly as many threes, but shooting them at a much better rate, 36.4%. He just looks like he's actually bought into the Rocket system, which is a pleasant surprise, especially considering the slow start that James Harden's off to.
He's benefited greatly from James being atrocious. I mean, James is averaging, you know, 29.3 points, and people are looking at that going, well, that's great. Yeah, he's shooting 28% from the field, 15% from downtown. He's basically living off of free throws right now.
Yeah.
Look, good on Russ for having a solid year. And if this is what it took for him to become a good player, like being traded, I don't know what that says about him. I don't know what it says about the OKC franchise. I'm not sure, but it's intriguing.
I think it just says he's surrounded by the type of teammates meant to maximize him now. Like, he's just on a team with a bunch of floor spacers compared to OKC, where they just drafted and just signed a bunch of rangy wings who can't shoot.
Right. Yeah, unlike OKC, who used to have this guy, Kevin Durant, who couldn't shoot at all.
Well, that was one guy. Who may or may not have hated Russell at the time.
Yeah. By the way, stat about Russ and Harden. Combined, they average 10.3 turnovers a game.
Yeah, that's not going to change. I mean, they have both been among the league leaders in turnovers for the past few seasons. They are both going to be still. I just wanted to crow about Westbrook now before the inevitable regression happens.
Yep.
So
I'm going to allow it. I'm going to allow it. That's fine.
Good. All right, Maury, let's switch to the disappointments now. You already mentioned the Brooklyn Nets, who I very much agree, compared to what I expected from them coming into the season. Big disappointment. Do you want to talk about your Chicago Bulls?
I want to talk about the Indiana Pacers first.
Okay, good. Let's go over there.
I think we should talk about the Bulls, but I want to talk about the Pacers first because they're 0-3.
Yep.
And, you know, I know that Victor Oladipo is out and it's indefinitely and all of that, but, you know, that roster is really good. I mean, they really stocked up on offense this summer. And, you know, yes, they sacrificed some defense by you know, letting Thaddeus Young walk, ironically, to the Bulls. But like, Malcolm Brogdon right now is averaging 22 and almost 11 assists, which, where's that come from? Like, Sabonis is averaging almost 21 and 11. Even Miles Turner is averaging 17 points a game, which, hey, I've been waiting on that for a long time.
Yep.
And they haven't won a game?
Yeah.
It's very illogical.
Well, they are ranked 25th in defensive rating and 22nd in offensive rating. Yeah, so when you are not good on either side of the floor, it is often difficult to win basketball games, unfortunately.
I get that. And they haven't hit a lot of threes, which, you know, should probably have been their calling card. I mean, T.J. Warren was shooting threes at a 43, I want to say, percent clip last year. Mm-hmm. And he's one of nine this year. Sabonis, who I thought would take more threes, is only taking three. You know, there isn't a lot of three-point shooting right now. But that's also worrisome because they actually have a lot of guys who can launch them. So I'm kind of wondering why they aren't leaning into that. They're only taking 23 shots a game from outside.
Yeah,
that should be 35.
Yeah, I mean, they are dead last in the league in three-point attempts. They are 29th in three-point makes. They're 14th in three-point shooting percentage at 34.3%. But, like, yes, Miles Turner right now is their second-leading three-point shooter at 4.7 attempts per game, which is great. I don't want to dissuade Miles Turner from taking threes, but you probably need more out of, I mean, Brogdon's taking 5.3. Warren's only taking three. I think he's just ice cold right now.
Yeah.
One of nine from three. That's going to get better. So, you know, that will help. They also, you know, they lost on the road to Detroit by 2 points. Like, neither Detroit loss is necessarily bad. The concerning one is losing to Cleveland.
Yes. That was a weird one.
Yeah. So, you know, we've got a battle of disappointments tonight coming up with Brooklyn versus Indiana. Someone has to win, so that's something. The schedule is very kind to them, I will say that, because they, after Brooklyn, they get Cleveland, Chicago, Charlotte, Washington, Detroit, Orlando, OKC. So you're right, we don't know when Oladipo is coming back. I can't imagine it's any time in the next, like, 2 weeks, but that affords them the opportunity to fatten up a little bit against a relatively weak slate of competition, hopefully get the season back on the right track so when Oladipo comes back, they hit the ground running. But you're right. I mean, they leaned into offense this summer with all of their signings and haven't really gotten it. I mean, Jeremy Lamb's only played one game, so that is something to consider as well. That was one of their big signings. So, like, they're still just a somewhat top-heavy team, unfortunately.
Yeah, I mean, it's just one of those weird curiosities. And again, small sample size. They could easily be, you know, 15 and 7 at some point.
Yeah. Oh, for, I mean, especially given that schedule coming up, I would not surprise me if in 2 weeks we're talking about a team that's hovering right around 500.
Yeah. So let's talk about a team who's had a very, very positive schedule and who's completely crapped the bed.
Yeah, who would that be?
That would be the Bulls, Brian.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. They had big leads in the opening game against the Charlotte Hornets, but just basically decided to not guard anyone on at the three-point line. Like, here's something amazing. Like, P.J. Washington, in his NBA debut, makes an NBA record 7 threes and scores 27 points. That's a rookie in his first game.
Yeah.
Like, and it wasn't even like the Hornets were creating, like, by themselves high percentage shots. It was just the Bulls, like, looking around. Oh, we have to rotate? Like, right. What is that? It was open shot against open shot. And everyone was like, well, okay. Well, that's not going to continue because this was, like, high school defense. And lo and behold, so far, it has most certainly continued. They lost a game against the Knicks the other night. Yeah. They were up, I think, 98-90 with, you correct me if I'm wrong, I think it was a minute and 33 left in the game. Up 8. And they somehow managed to just completely, not guard anyone. Bobby Portis had, a ton of open corner threes. And it was just Portis a nightmare for him. Yeah, revenge game. They've been cold. I mean, Lauri Markkanen is shooting 18.5% from outside, which that's not going to continue. But the worrying thing for me is outside of the defense, which has been atrocious.
Right.
It's Otto Porter Jr. He looks injured. He looks very injured, and yet he's playing. He's not moving all that well. He's averaging only 7 points a game. Like, he's not getting proper lift on his jump shot. He looks slow. There's something going on. There are a couple rumors about his hip, and in which case I'm like, then why are you playing him? They don't have any wings. That's the problem.
Right.
But Jim Boylan's rotations are also weird. This Bulls team is. I thought they would be significantly better, and so far it's been just bad all around. Most of their internal decisions just don't make sense.
I'm happy to continue to see the floor here, but I will point out two positives for the Bulls: Kobe White, Wendell Carter Jr.
Well, and to be fair, like, Wendell Carter is also, in my opinion, the guy who has the biggest chance of being the best player on this team. Unfortunately, he seems like he's going to miss tonight's game because he woke up and his eyes are swollen. So there you go. And if you're out there looking for hotel rooms in New York, that's probably not the best
idea. He definitely got pink eye, which is great.
And the thing about Carter is he's just picked up so many nagging injuries. And now that you throw in an eye infection, it's kind of glorious at this point. It's just fun. But Kobe White. You're right. He's been doing well. He's been struggling over the past two games, but he opened the season very hot. Like, he's a guy who can just create his own shot. And I have this sneaky suspicion that they're going to be grooming him to be Zach's replacement down the line.
Ooh.
Yeah. Because they are very anti, wanting to call him a point guard or a shooting guard. Like, they don't want to positionalize him.
He's a basketball player.
Yeah, no. It's worse than that. They call him a baller. That's Jim Boylan's. God. Yeah, he's a baller. That's the term.
No.
But he said he's 6'5". People kind of forget about that. When people talk about him, they kind of talk about him as if he's like a 6'2", shooter. He's 6'5", and he's got some body mass on him. He could play the two full-time in the league, and I have a feeling that's the direction they want to go in.
Interesting. Well, there's still a lot of time for the Bulls to turn this thing around.
They can get better. They just need to fix their rotations and both rotations, like their defensive rotations and their substitution rotations. It's right now it's all bad.
Yeah. I mean, they have Cleveland tonight, so
that's a loss.
On paper, it should be an easy win, but
I promise you it's a loss.
Right. You could have said the same thing about the Hornets and the Knicks. So there's that. They do have the struggling Pacers coming up. They have the Hawks potentially without Trae Young. Another game against the Knicks.
That's probably also a loss because this is what they do. They play down to the level of competition.
Well, after that, they've got two against Milwaukee, a Brooklyn, Miami, Portland.
I'm going to the Milwaukee one, so it's going to be so much fun going to the United Center when they're 1-9.
At least you'll get to move down from the 300 level because no one will be at the game.
Oh, that's a good point. You know what, Bulls? Just be as bad as possible. And then when you reach game 14 of the season and you're 1-13, just don't show up, fans.
Yeah.
Then I can go down on the lower levels with my son, who is still, for some reason, very high on this team.
I saw you the other day said you were going to watch the game with him, the Raptors game with him. And you need to just warn me if you're planning to do that, because I know you tend to not want to know what happened. But, right. If I could save you guys 2 hours.
That's true. That's true. The thing is, I can't watch a game that I know the results of. I just mentally check out.
Right.
And he wanted so badly to watch that game. So I was picking him up after school, and we were planning on, going home, having some tea, and watching the Bulls game. And an hour into it, we're just sitting there and looking at each other going, oh my God, this is awful. This is not even good basketball.
Right. So next time, just ask me, is it worth my time? And I'll tell you yes or no. And then if I say no, just go to the next game.
That is true. That is true.
Let's go to a few teams in the West for some disappointments.
Mm-hmm.
The Golden State Warriors.
Yeah.
Look, we knew it was going to be... This is not the same Warriors team from years past. It was Kevin Durant, Sean Livingston, Andre Iguodala in free agency. Klay Thompson is out with a torn ACL. They're integrating a bunch of new players. Willie Cauley-Stein is out. Kevon Looney is now out with a neuropathic condition, which sounds very ominous. So they get blown out in their first two games. Draymond Green is very blunt about the state of the team, and we'll leave it at that.
Mm-hmm.
They win Monday night against the Pelicans, who were missing Zion, Drew Holiday, and Derek Favors. So,
another disappointment, yeah.
Yes, we'll hit the Pelicans in a second. So I don't want to call that a get-right win necessarily. I mean, they were up huge. It was finished as 134-123, but they were up 25 points in the fourth quarter. So they righted the ship for now. Steve Kerr moved Draymond to the five, which is always the break glass in case of emergency move.
Right.
Which you would think he can't stick with for a long stretch during the regular season, but until one of Looney or Willie Cauley-Stein come back, he might not have a choice, because otherwise it's basically Omari Spellman, Eric Paschal, or Marquise Chris are your other front court options. So the Warriors, I picked them to make the playoffs coming into the year, and I am having deep regrets about that right now.
I am too, but I'm also kind of puzzled by Steve Kerr, because, in terms of rotations, he had a lineup against OKC, and I realized that OKC, were just giving the Warriors the business, but I just don't think that you have a lineup in there of... So I thought his name was Pascal. It's Paschal? Eric Paschal?
I think it's Pascal.
All right. But Pascal, I'm going to call him Pascal until I hear something differently, because I've heard Pascal on some of the broadcasts.
Okay,
Eric Pascal, Jordan Poole, Omari Spellman, and I don't remember the last two. Maybe it could have been Marquise Chris and Jacob Evans. Yeah, Jacob Evans was one of them.
Mm-hmm.
But that's just not the way you go about it. You need to have one of Steph or Russell. Russell at that point, I think, was just done. But Draymond in there at all times. Mm-hmm. You need to stagger a little bit. I've seen him just take a little bit too much talent off the court, and I'm wondering if that's him sacrificing wins in order to further the development of his bench. Mm-hmm. Which, if so, fine, I guess, but it's going to come at a pretty big cost.
Yeah, the Kumbaya Kerr moniker. Got stuck to him because he would do this throughout a lot of the regular season, even with, the Hamptons Five or whatever, the death lineup, all of those guys. When he had that much talent, he would still try to go 10, 11 deep into the bench to test out which guys worked best with which guys and, see who could hold their own once you get to the playoffs. You're right. I mean, we've been saying this for months now. It's just their margin of error is so much slimmer. Because they just don't have, they still have Steph, who is phenomenal. They still have D'Angelo Russell. I think you're totally right that one of those guys needs to be on the floor at all times, because you just need someone to be able to create the shot for themselves and others. But other than that, they are just so top heavy until Klay comes back that, you know, I'm worried. And I'm worried about their defense in particular. They lost a ton defensively. They are currently have the worst defensive rating in the league. This is a team that was routinely among the best defenders over the past few years. But losing KD, losing Iggy, losing Livingston, and with Thompson sidelined, those are four great defenders, all of whom are now either playing elsewhere or retired.
Are you telling me that it's not a good thing if you allow 128 points per game on 87.3 shot attempts? Because that is what opponents are shooting right now. They are averaging 100. Listen to that number again.
Yeah.
128 points on 87.3 shot attempts.
Doesn't seem ideal, no.
That's like KD, peak KD efficiency.
Yeah. Wow. That's wild. Yeah, man. The only team allowing more points will hit momentarily is the Pelicans on 98.5 shot attempts per game.
Yeah.
So more than almost 11 more shots per game for 0.3 more points.
The Warriors' opponent effective field goal percentage, 63.4.
Now, I mean, a lot of this is opponents have been really good from three. They're shooting 43.2% from three against the Warriors this year, which this could be the ultimate small sample size. Like, maybe they're just opponents have been unsustainably hot from three, and once they cool off, the Warriors' defense isn't as bad as we think. Or maybe the Warriors' defense is allowing teams to shoot well from three because they don't have the perimeter defenders that they have had in years past. It's like the chicken or the egg with who is the result of the terrible defense.
Yeah, I'm probably going to go with the latter. Not that I expect that they're going to allow an effective field goal percentage of 63.
Right.
But, I mean, they're not going to be good.
No. No, it doesn't seem that way. So I'm still not totally off on them making the playoffs, but I'm feeling far worse about it than I did a week ago.
Mm. Yep, me too. I mean, look, I had Curry as my MVP. You need to win games to win the MVP. So
right. Yeah. Well, you know, the other team, or one of the other teams that was in that conversation for the eighth seed was the Pelicans. We knew once Zion suffered the knee injury and is going to be out for 6 to 8 weeks, that probably knocks him out of the playoff race. But still, look at that team. It's still very deep. They were competitive against the Raptors in that season opening loss, took them to overtime. It's only gone downhill since. They had close losses against Dallas and Houston, but the Warriors game without Drew, without Favors, without Zion was an absolute rout. It doesn't get much easier for them. They've got Denver tomorrow, then OKC, Brooklyn, Toronto again, then a game against Charlotte, Houston, LA, the Clippers, Miami, Warriors, Portland, Phoenix, Utah, Clippers, Lakers, Thunder. Like, that is just an absolutely horrendous stretch for a team without Zion. How worried are you about the Pelicans?
Oh, they did.
Yeah. Yeah.
You can't get this far behind in the Western Conference. Yeah. Not, I mean, I get that it's early and people are like, oh, come on, Mort. It's a small sample size. It's only four games. Yeah, this is the Western Conference.
Yeah.
You are at a major disadvantage if you're down 0-4 early part in the season.
Yeah. Well, especially with that stretch coming up. Like,
especially with that. I will say this, though. You and I have hit something right on the money. You and I said for Brandon Ingram to unlock his game, all he needed to do was, drum roll, take more threes.
Mm-hmm.
He's done that, and he's averaging 27 points a game. And part of, I know that that's not the entire thing. Like, he's been creating a lot more off the dribble as well.
Yep.
But it's opened up his game. The fact that opponents now are looking for him when he's on the perimeter. Like, before, when he was a hesitant shooter, no one was like, oh, okay, I'm going to sprint my ass out there to guard him and just close out on him. Mm-hmm. Like, they were like, we know you don't like to take that shot, so you know what? Go ahead, big boy. Take it. It's fine.
Right. Right.
And now, because he's taking 7 a game, and he's also hitting it, by the way, he's shooting 50%, not sustainable, but I mean, it's a very, very good first sign. You can see that defenders are actually rushing out towards him now, and he's learning that, oh, okay, I can use that to my advantage. So a guy closes out hard on me, I can put the ball on the floor, I can get by him, and I can get an open mid-range shot, or I can continue my path towards the basket. Like, it's opened up his offensive game.
Right.
I like it.
Yeah, I mean, the Lakers will have no regrets about the Anthony Davis trade. The dude just put up a 40-20 last night and hit like
26 made three throws, though. Yeah. Can we please just... the NBA's been pushing that, 40 and 20 narrative very, very hard over the past 12 hours. And I'm like, 26 three throws. He shot 7 of 17.
He's scored 20 points in the third quarter, 18 of which came from the free throw line.
Yeah. But so,
it is a talent to draw that many fouls. Like, we can't – I get the instinct to poo-poo it because it's like, sure, he scored 40, but a grand majority of those points were from the free throw line. But
no, I mean,
they couldn't stop him. Like, that was their only way to stop him from – like, if they didn't foul him and just let him score, he still would have scored 40. Just – he wouldn't have to take as many trips to the free throw line. Like, the Grizzlies just had no answer for him, and fouling him was their only option.
Okay, fine. I'll buy that. But at the same time, I just don't think as a league, when people wake up and you promote this whole, AD had 40 and 20 and three quarters, go watch this game, and then people are going, he's going to be so dope, and he makes 7 shots.
Yeah. No, like, it was not one that you want to go back and rewatch because it's literally just a trip to the free throw.
Right.
Free throw parade.
Yeah. No, but I get it. I mean, look, how many games have we had of that with Harden as well, right?
Right. So, yeah, exactly. Yeah. And Embiid's the same way too. It's
he's beginning. By the way, before I forget, because I would totally forget if I didn't interrupt you and myself right now.
Uh-huh.
Josh Hart is kind of throwing himself into, a conversation of being like a very, very good player, far more than before.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say about, the Lakers don't regret the AD trade, but the Pelicans don't either. Like, Ingram, Hart, and Lonzo even. I mean, I know Lonzo is
looking good.
Yeah, he's, like, not shooting super well, but he looks, just eye test-wise, looks better.
I mean, he was never shooting well before. This is fine.
Right.
I mean, I'm pretty sure, I'm just going to open up his player profile here. Like, a career high from downtown, which offsets, because of the high volume, it offsets the raw field goal percentage. So a career high in terms of, like, shooting efficiency. A career high by far in free throw percentage. Mm-hmm. I mean, look, he's only taken 8 three throws, and the fact that he's hit 75% have already skewed his career average to the point where it's exceeded the 2 years prior.
That's horrible.
That is horrible, and it's fantastic all at the same time.
Yeah.
I mean, and career high in assists. Like, he's just doing stuff. Career high in steals.
Mm-hmm.
Career low in turnover so far. Career high in scoring. Like, getting out of L.A. and not, listening to Voldemort is probably the best thing that ever happened to him.
Yes. I think just being away from the distractions, both nationally and internally, seem to have helped him a ton.
Right. And I mean, we said as much for a long time. Like, he needed to get the hell out of L.A.
Mm-hmm. And so far, so good. I'd like to see J.J. Redick get going a little bit. 31.6% from the field. Ain't going to cut it.
That's not hot. And I also would like to see, MVP candidate Jrue Holiday score more than 10.5 points a game.
Yeah. Not a strong start to the MVP campaign that... I know David Griffin was just trying to, like, pump Drew up by saying that, but, like,
Trolling David, though.
No, but, like, some Pelicans fans bought into it, which was like, okay, guys, you know what he's doing here, right?
Yeah.
Like, he doesn't mean this. He's just he's trying to empower Drew, which is great. Exactly what you should do. But, like, Jrue Holiday was never I love Jrue Holiday. He's a great player. Mm-hmm. He all-star caliber player. Not MVP caliber player. Not supposed to be.
I would even go as far as saying all NBA kind of potential.
Yeah, I think he's just the type of player who's like, he's miscast as a number one option. And I think you could say the same thing about Brandon Ingram, at least prior to this year. And we'll see what happens when Zion returns. But like, Zion being out screws up their whole hierarchy and makes all of these guys play one level above where they should be. Again, with Brandon Ingram being the possible exception based on the leaps he's taken. Like, Drew, great number two option, miscast as a number one.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Yeah. By the way, when Jackson Hayes had his debut the other night, mm-hmm. I saw a lot of Pelicans fans were like, oh, well, you can't play him all that much. Like, the defense isn't there, yada, yada, yada. Where I couldn't escape this feeling that if he gives you 19 points on 82% shooting, like, screw defense.
Right.
I'll take that.
Yeah. That's what, like, that's he was what just, Okafor is about, too.
Yeah. I mean, look, he's so active. I think in and of itself, just like this sheer level of activity that he has is such an asset. I understand that, you know, he's not going to play disciplined ball because he's a 19-year-old center. I get it.
Yeah.
But there's still value in having those guys who can just change the flow of a game by being energetic and just rim running and doing all sorts of weird stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I like it. I think this team's got potential, but they're dead in the water right now in terms of like playoff hopes.
Mm-hmm.
But we knew that coming in. Like, J.J. Redick even admitted this on Zach Lowe's podcast over the summer, where he had been told by management that, you know, if it comes down to prioritizing winning or development, they are probably going to lean one way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, we'll see what happens when Zion comes back. I still have high hopes for them.
Overall.
But yes, I think it will be a rough start to the season that is not going to snap until Zion returns, unfortunately. Right.
Do the Kings now. Come on, let's do the Kings.
My God. Remember when we were high on the Kings? Wasn't that a fun week?
That was such a good one day. Yes.
Did it even last a day? It didn't last a day. Oh. They get blown out by Phoenix on opening night, lose Marvin Bagley to a thumb injury for the next month, then lose to Portland, Utah, and Denver. That, you know, Portland and Denver losses, both at home, both relatively close. Utah spanked them. Here's what kills me about the Kings, who have De'Aaron Fox, arguably the fastest point guard in the league.
Mm-hmm.
They are 25th in pace right now.
Yeah.
What in the ever-loving hell? Like, were we just totally sleeping on how important Dave Joerger was to this team and how important the change from Joerger to Luke Walton is?
You know what happened? I think we overlooked it. We overlooked the fact that a coaching change matters because the Kings do it every effing year.
Right, that's true. But is it possible that Luke Walton just isn't a great coach?
Well, I hate putting that in like an isolated type of conversation because you can never say a coach is necessarily like bad. It depends so much on roster, like what type of organization you are, which values are in the organization already. Like, let's take a guy like George Karl, who became a bad coach because he just wouldn't adjust to the league as it expanded into like a new era of spacing and pace and all that. But you can't argue that George Karl was like a bad coach forever. Like, he was a brilliant coach in the 90s. For Walton, I think it's just a matter of he came from a system where, at least before the Lakers gig, like in Golden State, where they had so many weapons. There was so much cohesiveness. Everything was kind of done for him, you know, when he took over for Kerr during Kerr's like back pains and all that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it was a well-oiled machine he took over. Like, it wasn't because he was there and that they started playing well. Like, mm-hmm. he just basically went into something that was running on autopilot and went, well, I'm not going to change the damn thing because it's working and I'm going to get a lot of praise for it.
Right.
And then he went to the Lakers and everything was kind of like, I mean, we were optimistic about his future, but he didn't really show anything that indicated that he was going to be like this Brad Stevens type, next generational type coach.
Right, right.
And now he's in Sacramento and we're seeing how he's not really making use of his roster. And but also, to be fair, the Kings, we had some expectations for the Kings going in. We absolutely did. But at the same time, you and I, we have also talked at length about how they wasted money this year. Like $37 million for Corey Joseph.
Yep.
Like $80-plus million for Harrison Barnes. $25 million for Trevor Ariza. Like there are a lot of weird deals that they gave out there. Like the one good deal, though, I mean, Dwayne Dedman, he's had a slow start to the season. You know, he has, but I don't think that's going to last. He's just too good.
Mm-hmm.
But when you spend money the wrong way, that can absolutely swing the quality of play.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, first step, run more. Please, God, Kings. You have,
yes.
Again, you have De'Aaron Fox. I wonder, Rashawn Holmes gave them a nice spark off the bench the other night. I wonder if we start to see a little bit more of him. Buddy Hield has not been shooting well from the field to start the season. He's been
cold.
Yeah, I mean, if that bounces back, so do the Kings. Like, I'm not out on the Kings. I think the Pelicans are like you. I think they are probably dead in the water. Kings aren't totally there yet. You know, they've got Charlotte and New York coming up this week, and they might get a break if Trae Young misses their game next Friday. But they have a tough close
though.
Yeah, and they have a tough stretch coming up at the end of the month. They got to flip this thing around pretty quickly if they want to keep their playoff hopes alive, which is an absurd thing to be able to say in the first week of the season, but welcome to the West.
So I have a question for you. I can't tell if I'm just making up things in my head when I watch them play, right?
Mm-hmm.
Bogdan Bogdanović,
mm-hmm.
he's been... Yeah, look, there's no two ways about it. He's been horrible this year.
Mm-hmm.
He seems to be somewhat mentally checked out. I don't know if that's something I'm just telling myself because I know that he isn't really happy about his own situation right there.
Yeah.
But he doesn't look as locked in.
Yeah, I can't tell if he's mentally checked out, but definitely bad. And it wouldn't surprise me. I mean, it wouldn't surprise me given, he's in a contract year. He wants to have his future secured. But, at the same time, I think it wouldn't surprise me if, he knows they just committed all this money to Harrison Barnes, Buddy Hield. There probably isn't room for him long term in Sacramento. So I could see him wanting some clarity on his future. He's frustrated that the Kings, that Kings offered the max they could. They were limited in how much they could offer him. They gave him the max. He has yet to sign it.
Although which is the right move because he can earn more.
Yeah. Right, of course. Next year's free agent class sucks. He'll be one of the best options out there. I could see them dangling him after December 15th. Mm. It would make sense for both sides, I think, if you're not going to be able to re-sign him. But at the same time, he does need to put forth some effort and play well. I mean, teams know what he can do, but there's a difference between are you a mid-level exception guy or do you get, somewhere close to $15 to $20 million? Right. Right now, if you're going to shoot 27.5% from the field, you're more of a mid-level exception guy. Yeah. There's still plenty of time left. I'm not saying he's going to have to settle for the MLE, but, he does need to play better. Look at Andre Drummond. Andre Drummond is the quintessential contract year guy who comes out and puts up 32 and 21 in his first night. And then the reporters ask him, is contract year Dre a thing? And he's like, yep, sure is. that's what you're supposed to do in a contract year. Put up huge numbers and then tank right afterward. Tobias Harris crushing it right now in that department.
It's amazing, though, that teams keep buying into the whole gimmick of it.
I mean, what are you supposed to do?
I don't know. If you're an external team, don't.
Yeah.
I get that you need to re-sign your own guy and stuff like that.
Right.
But we have seen teams look at guys, who go into a contract year and have a good year and they go, oh, well, he can duplicate that with us. Why bait yourself into that?
Yeah.
It's the dumbest thing at all. Again, we're also seeing it to some extent. This is internally, though, with Harrison Barnes, who's not had a good year.
Right.
As well. Maybe just stick with the Kings theme.
Yeah.
Yeah. But in regards to Bogdanovich, I really don't know. It's just I saw the game against Utah where they just got manhandled. And, you know, De'Aaron Fox and Buddy Hield and more or less the entire starting lineup played 20, 25 minutes or something like that. It was just very, very low. And it was like, okay, let's pull him out and let's get the bench in. And it seemed like Bogdanovich to me, and this is where I might be making up things, it's just like he was just upset at being one of those guys that had to just, you know, deal with the aftermath of this team just getting slaughtered, if you know what I mean. Like, oh, okay, I have to clean this up.
Yeah.
That's where I am on the pecking order, because he just looked visibly frustrated and upset, and I don't remember him having that type of body language before. And again, I'm not a body language expert. I'm not one of those, but
sure,
I've seen enough of Bogdanovich to realize that something is off.
Yeah. Yeah, it's very possible. And we have to remember that, you know, players are humans too. Emotions come into it, frustration with contract situations or whatever. Mood swings might be the operative phrase, to steal one from Jackie McMullen.
Yeah. That's a rabbit hole that we should not go down.
Correct. Yet. Yeah. All I'll say is, in defense of anyone, not necessarily Kyrie, but if this is the case with Bogdan too, like, dude, I get it. When you have uncertainty about your future, like, right now, I don't know where I'm going to be living next June. It sucks. There's, like, a pit in my stomach from now until December, until we find out. And then when we find out, there's going to be a pit in my stomach, because then we have to go find a place to live and set up movers. And I hate moving. Like, that all sucks. So
right. And then I'm going to have a pit in my stomach, because then I'm going to get a call that one day where, oh, well, you know, they decided to live in Baltimore. And Brian, he's shot dead right now.
So. Right. There's a non-zero chance I'm dead within a year. That yeah. also leads to a pit in my stomach. So, like,
relatedly, we are taking applications
for a new co-host. Yeah. But, I from my own perspective, if Bogdanovich is frustrated with not knowing where he's going to be in a year, I get it, and the best you could do is just, like, focus on the task at hand in your day-to-day life, and, like, things are just going to work themselves out one way or the other. But
right, because if he wanted stability, he could have accepted that contract, even though it would be below market value.
Yeah, and it's still on the table as far as we know.
Right, because the deadline for him is not the deadline that passed.
Right, he can do it up until June 30th, and I would assume the Kings will... Even despite how poorly he's started the year, I doubt they would pull that offer back, because they know it's so below market value.
He would be fantastic in Philly.
Yeah. Yeah. The problem is they just don't have salary matching pieces.
No. I mean, because you guys still – that's one of the things that we can talk about. I mean, you guys still need that – I know you're 3-0.
Mm-hmm.
You still need that guy who can create himself jump shots.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
I mean, having watched you play for I've watched you, Brian Support, play. Like, it's everything is going through Embiid. And we kind of knew that. We were talking about this, I think, a couple weeks back. And it's working when you're up big and when you have the whole game in hand. But when it becomes close, like, I don't feel as confident as before when you had Jimmy. I'm just going to be honest with you.
Yeah, I mean, I expected their offense to be a work in progress. I thought the defense would come out quickly, and it's frankly been arguably better than I even expected. And I thought they were going to be very good, but Matisse Thybulle has just been so freaking good so far this year. 8 steals, 4 blocks in 66 minutes.
He's an even worse offensive player than Cameron Reddish statistically right now.
Yeah.
But it doesn't matter, because defensively he's so outweighs
him. Yeah. It's just like the combination of him and Josh Richardson. It's just so wild to go from the Sixers cannot defend the point of attack at all to, oh, they now have Josh Richardson and Matisse. Went from 0 to 2 very quickly.
No, I'm completely in love with Philly's defense. What I'm not in love with is that Ben Simmons is not. He's not doing me any favors, because I predicted he would hit 50 threes. He hasn't even taken one yet. So Ben, get off your ass, man.
He will. They played a bunch of close games. I think he's really going to take them in garbage time. I don't think he's going to take them in close
games. I need this prediction to become true.
Yeah. I think, what was I at, like 10? I think.
Yeah, you were at 10, I was at 50. So right now, you're definitely winning that one.
There you go. Yeah.
But I would be remiss if I didn't ask you about this. How do you think Christian Wood has looked?
You know, I'm glad you mentioned him, because I wanted to end on the most improved player candidates. So Christian Wood has looked good. How about Bam Adebayo?
Who's a lottery pick?
A lottery pick averaging 16 and 11. Five assists, almost.
That's totally expected. He's a lottery pick.
Is it? Yeah. It wasn't expected. He was the 14th pick.
14th? That's still a lottery pick. It's the latest pick in the lottery, so we can split hairs here, but it's still a lottery pick.
I'm feeling very good about... I mean, neither one of us should feel good about our MIP picks, because if Brandon Ingram keeps this up, he's going to win, but...
Ugh, the second overall pick should win. Yeah. That's rich. Oh, but, my God, I'm going to strike on that award next year.
if Ingram wins?
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
I'm just... Look, the Heat, we should have mentioned them in the surprises. Doing, you know, being 3-1 without Jimmy Butler for three of those games. Also, congratulations, Jimmy Butler. Just had a new beautiful baby daughter, so that's awesome.
Riley? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, Kendrick Nunn? Tyler Hero, of course. Yes. Like you mentioned, Bam, who's been great. You know, Justice Winslow. I slept on this team. I'll be completely honest. I've not been high on the Heat. I thought that I didn't. To be perfectly honest with you, I did not think Winslow's game was sustainable. I thought that was just kind of a statistical hiccup, and he's proved me wrong. And Adebayo, who you rightly circled as a guy with great improvement. I mean, I knew he would be better, but this, I mean, look, when they played the Hawks, he took a pass. Like, he was in the short corner of the three, and he got a pass. He faked, took one power dribble, and pulled up and knocked it down from 17 feet. Bam Adebayo was a guy who more or less resembled like a rim-running center at Kentucky. He did not have this in his bag, not even close. Like he was some sort of Clint Capella version in college. And now he's taking passes in the corner, Brian, putting the ball on the floor and hitting pull-ups?
Yeah.
What the hell? How?
I don't know, but I'm here for it.
Yeah, I am too. That is like what he's doing right now is spectacular.
Yeah. I think if we're talking about which starts are sustainable and not, the Heat, I think that's sustainable. Like, this could be very easily a top four team in the East fighting for home court in the first round.
Yeah. No, I'm eating so much crow on the Heat. In my defense, Kendrick Nunn.
Yeah.
Like, don't tell me, people out there, that, oh, I totally saw Kendrick Nunn would be averaging 21 points after four games. Shut up. Right. No, you didn't. Right. No one did. Yeah. Not even Kendrick Nunn himself.
Right. The Hero thing, you could foresee Adebayo breaking out. You could see even Dragic getting back and playing better. You had it wasn't outside the realm of possibility. Kendrick Nunn was such a wild card. And really, I mean, the Butler being out for the first three games helped in that regard, of course. But, well, you know, this Heat team's looking good.
It is.
I look forward to getting the Sixers, knocking them out in the playoffs in the second round.
And one final note on the Heat, right? And Heat fans are probably going to be a little bit annoyed. I think they look fun so much more compared to the Dwayne Wade era. Because, look, and it sounds so awful because Dwayne himself was a very entertaining player. But it was all about him. Whenever he had the ball, it was like, you know, 10 sets of eyes, or 9 sets of eyes, rather, were just pointing it towards him. This is like a shared type of offense, like very unselfish, focusing on a lot more on threes and versatility. Like, it's just a more fun team to watch.
Yeah, I agree for sure. Any other disappointments you want to hit on, Mort?
Well, let me just go down the list here. I mean, I'm slightly disappointed in Portland being 2-2. But it's 2-2. Like, I would have put them on the list had they been like 1-3. But no, not really. I mean, we talked about Orlando just a little bit, I think. No. Washington being 1-2 was kind of expected.
Yeah. Yeah, right. Like we're not gonna hit on, you know, the Sixers being good, no surprise. The Clippers being good, no surprise. Lakers being good, no surprise. Whatever. So like, this is the deal with it. You know, now that the season has started, there's 30 teams going on. We're not gonna be able to hit every team every time. We will do our best to cover.
I got one though. I got one.
Yeah,
but it's a player.
Okay.
And I understand that he plays for a team that we looked at as the worst team in the league, the Hornets.
Yeah.
But I expected way more out of Malik Monk.
Oh, okay. I was going to say Devontae Graham is a pleasant surprise for them. But
This was just a negative surprise. Devontae Graham and PJ Washington are both pleasant surprises. Also a pleasant surprise. Look, this is basically breaking news. I mean, Terry Rozier is shooting over 40% from the field. Granted, it's 40.4, but Brian, so far, he's done it.
Didn't I say we made a bet before, and I think I said he would shoot 40.4, or maybe it was 40.2.
I have no idea whatever. I just know that you had him above 40, and I also have a beer bet with someone over here about him breaking that barrier. I said under. Yeah. I'm still a skeptic.
I said barely over 40, and he is proving me right. End the season now.
Yeah. Oh, my God. By the way, Dwayne Bacon, add him to the positive surprises so far. And that's kind of sad because he's shooting 35.8% from the field and 25% from three and 61.5% from the line. So efficiently, like, he's horrible. But I like the way that he moves, and he's rebounding the ball. He's actually being aggressive and engaged offensively, which beforehand, that wasn't really in the cards for him. I think he's going to be in for a bigger year.
Yeah, the bar is a little lower when you're grading Charlotte. But hey, Charlotte's not as horrible as, you know, they
have... Because they won a game, single game against the Bulls.
Yeah, correct. They're at least like more competitive than I thought they would be. I thought they were going to get cream most nights. But
well, so far they have. It was just Chicago that allowed them to hit 23.
They were like frisky against the Clippers for a while. The Clippers didn't blow that one open until late. Yeah. But yes, that is a fair point.
That is true.
So yeah, we will try to hit as many teams as possible throughout the season and like on each episode. But we obviously are not going to hit all 30 teams every time. So if we didn't talk about your team this time, congratulations. They're either good as expected. If you're a Sixers fan, Jazz fan of the LA team.
Spurs fan. We haven't talked about the Spurs. Jesse would kill us. I expected
them to be good.
Yes, I did too, but 3-0?
Yeah.
We didn't even mention them. I mean,
DeJounte Murray's good, man.
Well, I know, Brian. I know.
I think it would be insulting if I put the Spurs as a surprise because I knew we were just going to do the same stupid thing with them where we thought, you know, you underrate them, and then here they are. Yeah. They're 45 wins again. No, not a surprise.
You know what? I'll buy stock into that one. That's fair. Okay, yeah. So basically we're telling Jesse so he doesn't hit us up in our mentions that we didn't bring them up because we just expected them to be good.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that's, I'm down with that. That's not even – I'm not even BSing here. Like, I just really thought they were going to – this is what the Spurs do. Yeah. Also, they played New York and Washington to start the season. Come on.
I agree. I'm just saying 3-0. Well,
they have Clippers, Warriors, and Lakers coming up. So we'll have we will talk about the Spurs one way or the other next episode for sure.
Looking forward to that one.
Until then, please follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You can find our Twitter handles in our bios to give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes and wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some 5-star reviews. We're now being hosted on Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. Until next time, I'm Brian Toporek, and I was joined, as always, by Morten Jensen. Have a good one, Mort.
You too, Brian. I look forward to seeing Kawhi, who gets load managed tonight, be completely healthy so he could actually play against the Spurs.
I know. Kudos to the Clippers for allowing him to have his revenge game against the Spurs tomorrow. It's going to be fun.